And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 760. Coming out to you a little Friday afternoon, early evening, depending on where you're watching. We got the Cubs trying to come back in a softball score in Wrigley right now, as that has been pure chaos in the last couple of innings. But we're going to talk pitching primarily on this show after a little bit of news and notes. In order to do so, brought a friend of the show on, a friend of the fantasy world, a pitching guru, fantasy guru, depends on where you want to go about it. But you can find him over on the old Twitter there, at Spore. He's at the Sleeper on the Bus, Fangraphs, Rotographs, all over the place. Paul Spore, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing very well. Sorry about that. Literally, when you said, let's go live, my browser decided to crash, but I got right back in just in time. Doing very well, Bubba. You know, the season's in the full swing now. I really feel like we're fully in it. You know, Justin and I have been talking about how difficult it is to do content early. We're still in that zone where, you know, we're analyzing a lot of small samples, and usually the answer to like 92% of questions is wait. But, you know, playing time changes, injuries, you know, closer switches, things like that. We're starting to see some call-ups. We're going to talk about one, I think, a big one that just happened today. Those are the things where there's still plenty of analysis. So there are still things to cover, but I don't know about you. I'm sure you and Bloomer get annoyed when somebody's asking about a top 10 round player and whether or not they should cut him. Because the answer is always no at this point of the year.
I literally got a DM from someone this past week that named off like four top 10 round picks. And they said, what would you recommend? I said, literally, wait. And that's my only answer. And I just walked away. It's like, that's all you can do right now, man. It's really all you can do. Unless there's an injury of some sort, there's not a whole lot you can do.
No, like you just got to be patient. And like, I know that there comes a point, you know, I'm not an economist, so pardon me if I'm missing up some of these terms, but like the sunk cost fallacy or whatever, you can't for the entire year just say, well, I paid this round pick, so I should keep him. But that does apply early on. Like, I think you owe guys that you picked in like those top 10 rounds, let's say, because that's pretty universal. Top 10 rounds is pretty universal, whether you're in a 15, 12, 10, you should be keeping those guys, for me, a minimum of like 6 weeks. Again, unless the injury has greatly changed their outlook, those guys get 6 to 8 weeks for me before I'm going to do anything. Because how many times have we seen insert star name toting a 75 WRC plus for 6 weeks? I'm like, oh my God, he sucks. And then he puts up a 1.25 for the rest of the way, you know, and gets to where he's supposed to be. So anyway, be patient, folks. Just be patient. We just had tax day. We got Easter this week. We are barely into the season. So while we are in the full groove of it, there's still a long groove to go.
Yep, totally agree. Like, at this point, you got to trust why you picked the person in the first place.
Exactly.
So, see where it goes from there. And we will talk about it. Last week, I had Frank Stanfill on to talk hitters. Now we're going to talk pitchers with you, kind of the same. Let's just either, you know, take a step back. You guys have been doing it with on the Sleeper and the Bus. I just actually listened to your pitching one from like 2 days ago, yesterday afternoon. So, yeah, it's we're all in the same boat, as you said, trying to see if we could find something, but usually it's not a whole lot out there.
Right.
All right, let's talk about a quick little news and notes segment here. Christian Encarnacion Strand hit the IL on Thursday, this time with the back, though, not the wrist, which was kind of the concern for me. Is like, okay, I figured the wrist was still an issue. It's the back. Production was down. Nuelvi Marte has been called up. I guess my question for you, and I've been debating it in like, say you're in a 12 team or shallower league, are you holding CES right now?
I don't know. And I don't want to couch or I don't want to fence it on everything. I try to give as stern answers as I can. It is going to depend on what's available. Mm-hmm. I do think he is cuttable here, Christian Encarnacion Strand. And I came in as a positive on him. So this isn't something where it was a guy I didn't like and I'm going confirmation bias off of a small sample. Backs are tricky, though. They last. In fact, you know, if a guy, a young guy, even like Encarnacion Strand, starts getting a back popping up too many times early on in their career, I start to worry about the big picture. Because, you know, again, they're usually degenerative as, say, a Suzuki goes yard here.
This game has gotten drunk. It was like 1-0 into the sixth.
One of the craziest, like, this is classic Friday afternoon at Wrigley. Yep. Absolutely nuts. Tucker went lefty off Mantiply, and now Seiya got him. Beautiful. But anyway, yeah, I think CES is cuttable. You know, if you're in a Yahoo 10 teamer, you've only got maybe two ILs, you got a superstar already locked in one of them, I don't think you have to bend over backwards to hold him. Now, keep in mind, too, when you're cutting a guy like this, doesn't mean you're completely out. Sometimes you have to because it's a numbers game and you need the roster spot. I think too often people think that they're going to cut somebody and they're like, I'm getting rid of him. He's out. It could be temporary. You could be right back in when he gets healthy and even put a pretty substantial fab bid in on them. So I want to be clear that I'm in on CES overall, and I would look to get him back if I cut him. But right now, I think he's very cuttable in a 10 and 12 because you want to be in on the players that are coming up available, and he might be the only one you have to cut.
Yeah, and that's been like my biggest thing. I've been debating this for like almost 2 weeks now with CES because of production and now injury, of course. But my biggest thing has been what's available. Because like early in the season, it was Ben Rice, Torkelson. Like he had all these options. Now they're all gone. So yeah,
that's a great point.
So like the newest one I have for you, because it actually became first base eligible when I put him in my lineups today. Would you go Matt Mervis or Christian Encarnacion Strand?
Oh, it is nice that Mervis got the got off the schneid of util only. I got to say, though, I was a big Matt Mervis guy. I think you were at the Arizona Fall League when we all went gaga over him.
Home run derby, going crazy, yes.
And we've been waiting for him, and we're seeing an inkling here. So I know the inclination is to jump in and say, finally, it's happening. It's sort of happening. I still see a 40% K rate. I have some concerns. I would lean CES. Now, again, if the case is I need somebody who's playing and doing something, I could understand making that move. I'm going to lean CES in most cases, but if it's push come to shove and you need somebody who can play, ride the Mervis train right now, see where it goes. But I do worry about this. I don't think this is a full breakout yet when I see a 40% K rate and a 55% homer to fly ball rate. Folks, no one's going to keep a 55%. That, you know, over half of your fly balls going out, a 20% for a premium power hitter. So I want to be psyched about Mervis, but the under the hood keeps me from getting too overly excited about it.
Valid point. I guess the last question I'll have for you here on this topic is, with Noelvi Marte back up, is there any interest there right now? Because when they called him up, he just got sent back down. He barely played the first time.
Exactly. That's the concern, is that it was such a quickie, like, oh, what's going on here? Okay, now he's back up. I can't quit a guy like this, though. I know he's been through a lot already. He's been in our consciousness for a while as a young prospect to kind of hit the scene. He had the PED injury, of course. He was wretchedly bad last year, too. But my man is still 23. And with somebody like that who only has a career 373 plate appearances under his belt, I am inclined to still stick with Noelvi Marte and still have some intrigue. It is confined to the deeper leagues right now, 15-teamers, NL only. So for CES, I don't know that I would do it, but general interest in Noelvi Marte, yes, there is still some. I was looking at him for the 15-teamers this past weekend. I kind of got blown out of the water, which if people wanted to go high on the bid, I backed off and I let them. But smaller bids, I was interested.
Yep, definitely with you there. Some more news here. Matt Wallner to the IL with a hamstring injury. Luke Kuechel, I might be pronouncing that wrong. I apologize.
I think you got it
right. Was promoted. He's number 57th prospect. To me, he's got like a Brooks Lee vibe to him, but some people that are smarter than me in prospects say it's a better hit tool than Brooks Lee. I guess we'll see. He's playing second base, had TJ coming off TJ surgery. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on Kuechel? Because he will be a very popular point of contention this weekend if he has like a couple hits.
See, and that's the problem for me, is I don't want to pay the small sample premium. And we're going to talk about the big guy who's coming up as a prospect here that I really worry about it with. But with Kuechel, I do worry that if we see, you know, a couple multi-hit games and a steal mixed in, then all of a sudden the price is going to be sky high, because he's fine. He's interesting. I'd almost rather he not do that well. I don't want him to go complete over, because then he might get sent right back out. But I don't want to get caught up paying a premium here. You mentioned a comparison to Brooks Lee. I'm a big Brooks Lee fan. So if the prospect folks think he can be even better, to me, that just says that he could be really good, because I think Brooks Lee, you know, has some decent upside. Maybe I'm just overrating Brooks Lee, though. I'm open to pointing that out. So no, I'm not going to go crazy on Kuechel, especially, like I said, if he does something between now and Sunday, because I think that will raise the price artificially. I think he's an okay guy who, if he's playing, he should get some attention. Like if he starts Friday, Saturday, and Sunday before you bid, okay, get in on him. 15 teamers, maybe even 12s, but let's not go crazy, especially if he goes off with hits in every game.
Yep. No, I'm pretty much on the same page with you on that one. Another quick prospect note here. Edgar Caro is promoted to be the catcher of the White Sox. I kind of comped him between like a Gabby Moreno, Kyber Ruiz type, good hit tool, good OBP, little bit of power. Got the start on Thursday, went 0-3. My whole thing is if they're going to play him every day, he's a catcher too for me in like 12 team and deeper.
Fully co-sign that, both the comp and the C2 viability for Edgar Caro. They could be running Caro and Teal by the summer. This is why I keep saying that this team will get better. They're bad, and they're 4-14, and I'm not saying that they're going to be a good team this year, but I have them down to be regular bad because I think as they add the prospects, their arrow goes up all year. Again, it's still a 60s-type win team, but once they get the Caro and Teal combo going, Colston Montgomery comes up. They got some other guys. Chase Madroth is already up. So I like where they're headed. But yeah, Caro's a solid C2. We play a lot of deeper leagues, and most of them are two catcher leagues.
Yep, definitely. Mike Clevinger, DFA, do you even care about the closing situation in Chicago?
I truly don't. And this is as somebody who unfortunately has to chase closers. I try to pay for saves, and I did get an A closer in both my main events, but I didn't get that second closer. So I'm kind of piecing it together. Jordan Leisure, Cam Boozer, no, I'm literally 0% interested. I think they might have one save, if that, this year.
They have zero.
Yeah, they have four wins, so I'm not even surprised.
Yeah, and last year they were the worst in baseball with 21 total saves. So it's really not worth – 21 total saves. Second worst was 33, so they weren't even close to second worst. They were just that horrifically bad.
Goodness. That is like just
– I had to look it up because, I do talk too much on these. I'm like, okay, I got to see what it is, and it's horrible. As bad as you think.
Yeah, so just freely ignore that situation.
Yes, unless you get them for like 50 cents instead of a dollar if your league allows that. Caleb Durbin is getting promoted. Now, this is where it's fun because you mentioned we talked about Kieschel earlier. We're going to talk about the big name next. But this is like Fabapalooza a couple of years ago, Paul, where like four guys got called up at once. Someone's going to slip through the cracks. Now, it might not be Durbin. It might not be the next guy, but someone will. Caleb Durbin, I think we all wanted to start the season at third base for the Brewers. Mm-hmm. A lot of people drafted him. Some had to drop him, unfortunately. Not in the main, though. I think he's 74% still rostered in main. So people held tight there, which was good. Where do you sit on Caleb Durbin?
I'm a fan, and I was listening to the show, the Fab Preview, and I think it was you who made the comp. It was you or Bloomer, but I said it in unison with you. You said, "Oh, who's that guy?" And then together we said Tyler Black, because that's exactly who I thought of. And I don't remember if that was you or Bloomer, but that was the first comp that I thought of too. And I was like, I'm a little bit burnt by that, but by the same token, I'm still going to take a shot. I liked Durbin in the offseason. I learned about him this offseason. I'm not going to pretend I knew who he was before the trade. But once he got traded over to Milwaukee, I've been keeping tabs. I'm excited. So I kind of hope, again, like I was saying with Kieschel, I kind of hope he doesn't do anything too crazy this weekend so that I can get him. I want Caleb Durbin to get everyday playing time. Listen, I know it was cool that Vinny Capra went yard on opening day, but what the hell is he doing on this team? Yeah. Who is that, by the way? Like, is that a real player? Yes.
That was the question.
I was surprised that Durbin didn't get the shot, but here we are 2 weeks in. He's getting the shot. Let's go. I'm very interested in Caleb Durbin. I think he can be he's a better fantasy player than prospect without a doubt. Whereas some of these other guys we're talking about, maybe even Kieschel is a better real life player than fantasy.
Yeah, and Durbin's about 4% rostered in OCs, 74% in main. So get your bidding shoes on in 12s.
That's right.
Here's the one we've been joking and / hinting about this whole time. Richie Palacios, it was fun. Came up for a game, back to the IL. Yeah, that's
cool. Hate when that happens.
And I hate when it happens when it means on a Friday afternoon, Chandler Simpson gets the call up, who is just a speed demon. Basically, I heard the comp in the Discord today that he's Luis Arraez with immense speed, basically.
Which is crazy to think.
So what's your thoughts here? We kind of joked before the show, but where are you at on this one? Because he's going to go for some stupid money.
That's the thing. And I don't even know if he has to necessarily have a big weekend. But if we see multiple steals out of Chandler Simpson, you're talking like a 400 type guy. Like people are going to go crazy. I'm not saying they necessarily should, but I think that's what we're going to see in the main event landscape and in some of the OCs too. And that's where the OCs become really tough. They're already kind of difficult to kind of know where the bids are going to be in a 12 teamer, but they end up being super wide, right? So if Chandler Simpson comes up, steals three bases, you're going to have some OCs where he goes for 500 and others where he still goes for like 48. And that's just the nature of 12 teamers. And that's why they're so tough. But I think we're going to see some big numbers here. I'm interested. I'm going to put some keep him honest bids because no matter what, and every time we see a guy like this come up in the 50, whatever main events this year, it's 57. There's always two or three that somebody gets him at like $72 and as opposed to the triple digits that he's going to go in most leagues. So I'll be in, but I'm going to be on that lower end mainly because for now, at least I don't really need the speed. But if you are desperate for speed, you just didn't draft it or you lost somebody that is the main speed component, Simpson's your guy and you're going to have to pony up, but this might be the time to drop a big, you know, $200 to $300 bid to get somebody who can truly change your outlook in a category.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'll put my keep them honest outs there. I'm not a big bid guy, and I'm always concerned with platoons in Tampa Bay. Yes. But when he's out there, like we still saw Caballero steal over 40 bags, and Simpson has a much better hit tool than that. So could bring plenty of fantasy goodness. Like put him leading off there with the big guys hitting behind him. That could be a big game for him.
Absolutely.
Last one real quick here. The Orioles are calling up one of their top pitching prospects, Brandon Young, to get the spot start on Saturday. We don't know how if he sticks though, because Kyle Gibson's due back I think in a week or so. Yep. So Young has to pretty much earn it, it sounds like. So any interest here at all, or just kind of congrats for the kid?
It is kind of congrats for the kid. Now I will say this, Dean Kramer and Charlie Morton are quite literally two of the worst pitchers in baseball right now statistically. I'm not saying that talent wise they are going to necessarily stay at that level, but they're both pitching brutally right now. I don't think Morton's going to go anywhere. They're going to let him work through it, and they're probably going to let Kramer work through it. But as you mentioned, Gibson's coming up, and if Kramer continues to really stink, that could be an avenue for Young to get in, even with Gibson coming back, because Grayson Rodriguez had a setback. I think he's in some real trouble here. I don't really know why people are holding him, by the way. I think you guys talked about that on the Fab preview. Why is he still
MRI came back today, and they already said he's going out for other opinions.
Oh, it's so
cooked. You know where this goes.
It is so cooked. If you're still holding them, I think you're just wasting a roster spot.
100% rostered in 12s. Makes no sense at all.
Absolutely wild to me. So, yeah, Brandon Young has some intrigue, but don't go crazy, even if he has a great start. In fact, specifically if he has a great start, don't overpay, because this could be a one-and-done type of deal. Remember, people went crazy for Joe Boyle, and Tampa Bay sent him right back out. So you don't want to get caught holding the bag there, and we just don't know how much time Brandon Young can actually get for Baltimore.
Great comp, too, on the Boyle thing, because people did spend some silly money on that. And I like Boyle, but I'm with you.
I do, as well. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about it. I mentioned last week I had Frank Stanfill on to talk about some hitters that were off to some rough starts, how we call it the hitting panic meter, I guess. But I kind of did a good and a bad. You know, these guys just kind of stand out as maybe are over or underachieving from preseason expectations. And I wanted to get Paul's thoughts on, like, where does he believe maybe things end? Like, what should we expect going forward? Because, you know, all small samples, large numbers, things like that, people will talk about this whole time period. So we're going to start with one of probably the hottest pitchers, or, you know, guy that basically I got in a reserve round in an OLAC this year. Wow. It is Chris Bassitt, who is having just an insane season right now through four starts. Paul, he's picked up the two wins. That's great. But we're seeing a 0.77 ERA to go with a 2.37 CR, which is still very, very good. But more impressively to me, Paul, is a 28% K to walk and an almost 34% strikeout rate from Chris freaking Bassitt. So where are you at on this one? Because we know pitchers can, you know, change things in the offseason and whatnot. But Chris Bassitt's 36, Paul. We don't change much besides the pins about that point in time. Like, what do we got going on here?
Yeah, this is really intriguing here. And Bassitt was somebody I was pretty cold on coming into the year. I made a small pivot, put him back up the board, you know, a handful of spots. I'm not going to pretend that I was in on this or called this or anything, but I started to get a little bit more keen on him based on a real soft factor, if I'm being honest. It was the fact that Scherzer's back with him. And one of the broadcasts I watched during spring was talking about how Bassitt really learned a lot from Scherzer, like as a player coach, from their year together with the Mets. That one year, they really bonded well. And first off, I already thought that maybe there could be some regression back to the mean after last year's tough season. Although when you're in your mid-30s, it's hard to project that. So I really wasn't that hot on him. But the way they talked about how Scherzer is able to help him kind of stay in line with his arsenal and you know, basically be like a secondary pitching coach for Chris Bassitt did give me a little intrigue in him. Now, I don't know if Scherzer's had anything to do with this fast start, but it did bring him back on my radar, and he looks excellent. So it's obviously not going to stay at this level, but can he get back to what Chris Bassitt was in 2023, where he had a 3.60 ERA and a 1.18 whip? Yeah, I actually believe that that is more than possible. So I'm riding this out for a while. I'm not going to jump off at the first sign of trouble. He'll get a bad start or two before I really make any sort of moves, because I got to let him regress a little bit. But yeah, I think Bassitt could end up being one of the sneaky gems of the year, a crusty old vet that people just didn't care about, that you were getting super cheap, and boom, he bounces back, because guys with, you know, lengthy track records can sometimes get back on track even in their mid-30s.
Yeah, we're kind of seeing it in Toronto. Like, I'm going to just jump to his teammate real quick to kind of keep it here. Kevin Gausman is, like, he's not nearly to Bassitt's level just right yet, but we're seeing Gausman through his first four starts. You know, the 2.49 ERA is a plus. The Sierra 3.75. You could work with that where you drafted Kevin Gausman. Strikeout rate 22%, 18%, almost 19% K to walk. So we're seeing him at least revert closer to what he was before last year's blow up. So I guess my point was, A, you could give your thoughts on Gausman. Obviously, I'd appreciate that. But like, we're seeing Bassitt do it, we're seeing Gausman do it. Maybe there's something cooking in Toronto again after a kind of a hiatus. Who knows?
Yeah, and on the hitting side, we're seeing Springer do it too. So yeah, some of their old guys, you know, it was a rough season last year for Toronto, and here they are back on track a bit, at least with certain player performances. With Gausman, I was fully out on him this year. I was not paying the premium, and my biggest concern was from last year with that 10-point drop in strikeout rate from 31 to 21. That was super alarming. And it came with a three point drop in swinging strike rate, which is pretty substantial. When you're living with rates that are in the, you know, 10, 13% range, 3 points off of that, that's a big dip. So I was gravely concerned here. And because the strikeouts aren't really back, I still share a good bit of that concern. We don't even have to go that deep under the hood with Gausman, and we see that he's running a 172 BABIP, a 1.4 homer nine, and those two things are incongruent. Now, they're not directly related, homers and hits, but the fact that the hit suppression has been so good and he's still allowing homers and the strikeouts aren't up tells me that this is going to regress. For me, this is simple. I look at the ERA indicators. Sierra is mine of choice, the skill interactive ERA, but FIP, XFIP, they're all on the same page that he is a upper threes ERA guy. That's how I'm operating with Gausman. That has value in 15 teamers, but I don't think he's back. I think Bassitt is way more back than Gausman.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, actually. But yeah, it is good to see Gausman bouncing back. I do think Bassitt looks amazing compared to him. Before we get back to pitching here, Pat Murphy, I believe, of the Milwaukee Brewers just said Caleb Durbin is the third baseman of the future and the foreseeable future for the Milwaukee Brewers.
So let's go.
Another token on top of that one. All right, going to the New York Mets here, Siler McGill. It's been a couple years since he had that nickname, and he's at least pitching closer to that. That is Tyler McGill for those that are living under a rock on that one. But he's made four starts this year, looked very, very good, a 1.4 ERA. Now, obviously not sustainable, but the underlying indicators look pretty good in that regard. And we're seeing a guy that still has a little bit of a walk issue, 8% walk rate, but a 23.3% K rate. So we're getting good stuff from a guy that didn't cost us a lot, basically, Paul. Do you think he can sustain this going forward, or do we kind of get worried that we're going to see a revert back to kind of what we saw the last couple of years when we get excited about him?
There is some concern of the reversion for Tyler McGill, but he is somebody I've liked. I like your Siler McGill. I know Nick Pollock of Pitcher List calls him Ty Lord McGill. This is a guy I've had the classic, I can't quit you, because every time we get an inkling, I want to dive in and I inevitably get disappointed. But we are seeing some things that are a bit better this year, including a 115 stuff plus. Now, this is just like all the other plus numbers, where 100 is average. So 115 is 15% better than league average, which is really, really strong. And if we're seeing that kind of stuff from Tyler McGill, I think that suggests that his strikeout rate can either stay at 23 or even get better. He's a career 23%, but he was at 27% last year. So I think we could even see that trickle up. He hasn't allowed a homer yet. That's why the ERA is so good. But again, I'm going to go to the skill interactive ERA. It's at 3.60. If you can promise me a 3.60 the rest of the way with a decent whip, he does need to shave that down a bit. 1.34 is a bit high, but I do think Tyler McGill can improve his BABIP. So if the whip is closer to like 1.25 with a mid to upper threes ERA, I'm good with that. for what you paid for Tyler McGill, he doesn't need to be much better than that. He brings some strikeouts, plenty of win upside being a Met. I'm fully in right now. And again, this is a guy where even after a bad start or two, I'm not going to jump off right away. I want to see this through here and really give him some time. So that's the tough part about the hot starts is, do you jump off at the first sign of trouble? For me with McGill, no. I'm going to see it through, especially if it's just like a one bad inning or a tough matchup. I'm not going to jump immediately because it's inevitable, right? He's going to have a bad start to get this ERA back, into the mid threes. He's not going to run a 140 all year, but pro Tyler McGill.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to hold on as long as he'll let us basically and see where that goes. Really curious your thoughts here because I do have a conscience and a memory like an elephant when it's not good things, I guess. And one is Matthew Liberatore, what he's done to us in the past. Big prospect, upside to him. And I understand those are growing pains that took place there. But so far to start 2025, we are seeing a kind of movement in the right direction. Let's put it that way. He's made three starts, six innings or more in all three starts. Seven or more Ks in the last two starts at Pittsburgh at home versus Philly, and he shut down Philadelphia in his last start. So unlike the other ones, though, we're also seeing a higher ERA at 3.93, Paul, but the indicators like his Sierra says 2.81, his XFIPs 2.61, so on and so forth, and we're seeing a 24% K to walk. A 1.4% walk rate is beautiful from a young arm. So should we be buying back in right about now?
Yes. Okay. When I was talking about Matthew Liberatore earlier in the year, I asked, whoever I was talking with, whether it was on a guest spot or with Justin on the Sleeper in the Bus, do you ever have those guys, Bubba, that you're in on, but you don't recommend widely, not because you're trying to keep something special to yourself, but because you know the player isn't that good and you don't want to like lead people astray? That's Liberatore for me. I can't quit. This is another dude I can't quit, but unlike McGill, I don't go around telling everyone to get Matthew Liberatore. I kind of keep it to myself. Again, not as a sneaky play, but because I don't want anybody else to take the beating with me. But so far, things are looking good. And the reason I'm really excited is because the strikeouts are up. 25% is really nice. A 104 stuff plus doesn't jump off the page the way it does with McGill, but that's workable. It was at 104 last year, but he wasn't really getting the swings and misses with it. He wasn't getting the strikeouts. He was getting swings and misses, but he wasn't putting guys away. Matthew Liberatore is putting guys away at a better clip. You mentioned the pristine walk rate. That will regress a bit, 1.4% walk rate. That's going to go up, but it can go up a decent bit and still be very valuable. I'm seeing this out a little bit. I hate to keep repeating the same concepts here, but this is another one where I'm not going to immediately jump off when he has a bad start. I really want to see where this goes. It's more of a deep league play. I think somebody like McGill, I can start to see in 12s and maybe even stream in 10s. With Liberatore, it really is that 15-team universe where I really like him, and he's probably just your standard streamer in anything else. For example, he's got the Mets tomorrow.
Yeah.
You could maybe run that in a 12-teamer. It would really depend on your situation. I don't think you have to bend over backwards to do it. He's got Milwaukee the following week. That's the same sort of vibe. But in 15-teamers, I got Liberatore in the lineup, and I have him comfortably in the lineup for these next two starts at the very least.
Because Ryan tried talking me into him last night too, so I really wanted to get your opinions on Liberatore because what he's done so far, it's hard to ignore. That's for darn sure.
I don't blame your trepidation, by the way. I want to be clear. Because, again, this is a guy that I have a hard time banging the drum too hard for everybody else to get in. But I want to see it through. He's 25. He only has 200 career innings, right? So we just hit, like, the first full season mark, quote-unquote, and that was spread out over 4 years. So I'm really eager to see if he can deliver on some of that prospect hype that Matthew Liberatore had.
Yeah, it's just weird because I should be better about this because I am like Bloomfield always gives me a hard time because I'm too optimistic on young players being able to get better. Mm-hmm. And this is what he potentially is doing right now, Liberatore.
Right.
And so that's what I should be in my brain. Okay, I should support this. Here we go. Like he's doing it. And it's just, I guess he scarred me so much. And to your point about not like banging the drum loud, Paul's been doing this so long, folks, that there are so many mean people out there that will come into his DMs for no reason. There's a reason he's doing what he said he's doing. Like, it's just sometimes the noise is.
Thanks a lot for that recommendation, idiot. That's why I'm like, guys, if you join me on the Liberatore train, I know that the track eventually just goes off a cliff, but we're Thelma and Louising this together.
Exactly. It's going to be a bumpy ride, folks. Hold on. Buckle up. Chris Bubich, this was one that was kind of kept gaining steam throughout draft season. Like, you know, it was crazy. Every time you get a spring start, strike out 4 out of 5 or something, and just keep going. He's backed it up, though. It's been pretty impressive to start the year. He literally has he has 3 quality starts. He only went 5 1/3 in his last outing, so 3 runs or less in all 4 starts, and that's at the Yankees, at Cleveland, Baltimore, at Milwaukee, so not all complete pushovers either. 5 or more Ks in every start. He has 8 or more in 2 out of 27 Ks in 24 innings. Dude's been great. Where are we sitting on Bubich, though? Because I know we've started to tilt our brain to the concept, but still is a reliever turned pitcher, a starting mm-hmm. pitcher. It was originally a starting pitcher. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But you know what I'm trying to say. Like, we've seen this the last few years, and we've seen it finally be more successful. But I guess there's still the concern, like, how long? Like, does he go Jordan Hicks, or does he go Michael King, or is it Raisel Iglesias, which is kind of in the middle?
That's such a good range there of comps. And I think mentioning Jordan Hicks here is really good because, folks, Jordan Hicks ran hot for almost 2 months last year where things looking like they were working. And as an avid, well, I don't want to say avid because I'm not really against him as a person or anything, but as somebody who's very skeptical of Jordan Hicks, I had a hard time getting bought in last year. But then as we flipped the calendar over to June and he was still toting a 2.70 ERA, I'm like, well, maybe I'm wrong on this. And then everything came unglued. I think Bubich has more staying power than that. It's not quite Michael King, who, you know, is in people's top 20s, mine included, by the way. You know, we've really turned to turn him into a fantasy ace. But I think Bubich has more juice than somebody like Jordan Hicks. You know why, Bubba? Because he misses bats. I know Jordan Hicks has some of the nastiest stuff in baseball. It's the most gifable stuff out there. But it's like Dustin May. It doesn't miss enough bats when it's doing it. And Justin Mason made a good comp to those two guys today with Jose Soriano. He might be going the same way. 100-mile-an-hour sinkers. The thing of it is, y'all, sinkers don't really miss bats. So even when you're throwing them 100, they can look real sexy on a pitching ninja GIF, but it's not going to be a big bat misser. Chris Bubich has a 15% swinging strike rate. That is fantastic. 26% K rate. And we have seen glimpses. We saw 3 starts in 2023 right before the TJ. We saw 30 innings out of the bullpen last year. We saw a big spring training and now 24 innings this year. It's been little drips and drabs. We haven't really gotten the full sample yet. So I understand why people were skeptical to fully buy in, but the price never got cost prohibitive for me. Somebody that I was in on, Gavin Williams, his price got pretty crazy and I paid it. But it got pretty crazy. Clay Holmes, price got pretty crazy. Yep. Grant Holmes, price got a little wild. Chris Bubich, I felt like the price was always affordable in draft season. So that's always why I've got a 200. Few shares. Yeah, it was easy to buy in here because even if it doesn't quite go super well, you have some protection. Thankfully, it is going super well, and I believe in Chris Bubich. I'm in on this big time.
Good. We're on the same page then because, yeah, I got my shares, and I think he's also got the pitch mix that can transfer to the starting rotation, which is also a plus in this situation. All right, let's go to Miami, where one of their young guns is healthy for now. Here in Perez, we'll see you at the All-Star break, hopefully. Max Meyer, this has been one where all of last season, Paul, we're like, why is he in AAA still? That was like the weekly conversation. Well, still probably the wrong decision, but it's working out so far this year. Meyer's made 4 starts. He's coming off of 3 straight quality starts, nearly a third of an inning short of 4 in 4 outings, which is great. 27 Ks in 24 innings pitched, 2.63 ERA with the ERA indicators saying that looks pretty legit, actually. Kid looks good, and he faced a tough Arizona offense at the Mets, at the Braves. Like, I know the Braves are scuffling, but still really solid performances from Max Meyer. So I guess to me is the biggest concern I have is, you know, what's the Marlins going to do with innings, I guess.
Sure.
But other than that, are we just like rock and roll with Mac? Like, is he an auto start right now, basically?
Yeah. Then we had the exact same conversation this morning on the Sleeper in the Bust of, is he an auto start? Because we did our 2-start episode and I brought him up. You know, we're starting him for the 2-start easily. It's Cincinnati at home and then at Seattle. So that's a slam dunk. But then I was asking Justin, beyond that, is Max Meyer somebody that even in your 10s and 12s, is pretty much in your lineup regardless? And we both came to the conclusion that yes, the win potential is virtually non-existent. This team sucks out loud, and that's a bummer. But that doesn't mean that you have to run from him. There's guys sometimes where you take the ratios, you take the Ks, and you try to spike your wins elsewhere. He does have a win, which, you know, that's something at least, a win in 4 starts for Max Meyer. But yeah, I can't get away from him. He's got the Athletics the week after that. They're a nice, froggy team. I respect that offense, but I'm not running from them with Max Meyer. It's at home, too. So anytime he's at home, I'll pretty much take on anybody. Maybe not the Dodgers in like a 10-teamer, but I love Max Meyer. I liked him as a prospect. I'm psyched with what we got right now. he's an auto start for me in just about every format. Tens, it's hard to say auto start just because you drafted him so late, you could have a deep rotation. Yes. But in 12s and deeper, I have a hard time seeing too many rotations where you don't auto start Max Meyer right now.
Yeah, 100% with you. I'm just mad at myself for not having more shares of Max
Meyer. Same.
That's the biggest bugaboo there. All right, we've had a bunch of these like really good guys who are like, okay, yeah, this all looks checks out. We're good. Mitchell Parker is one where I can listen to a lot of conversations on both sides of the fence here. Love what we've seen so far. Four starts, six innings or more in each start, three quality starts out of the four. We got six Ks against Pittsburgh last night. He's got five or more Ks in two out of five. Here's where it gets a little murky, Paul. He's got the 1.85 ERA, which is outstanding. We like that. But now we're talking a 4.56 Sierra. That's a three-run gap. That stands out. I know it's early, stands out. And then you look at the K to walks. He's got a 9% walk rate to go with the 16% K rate. So it's basically a 7% K to walk. That ain't going to really cut it either, Paul. So where are we at on Mitchell Parker right now?
You know, he's an intriguing 15-team deep league type of guy. And I think that that's where it's going to have to be capped. It's going to be a standard streamer in your 12-teamers. And when I say standard streamer, I just mean you pick up, you use him, then you cut him. And whereas what I call a team streamer is somebody that you're streaming between your reserve roster and your starting roster. So with Parker, I have no problem. You know, for example, he's got a two-step this week, both at home and both kind of difficult. Baltimore and the Mets coming in, that's not easy. But I'm open to it. I'm starting him in 15s, and I think he's on the board for 12s. It's not a must, but it's something that you can go for. I really like this kid. I think he's interesting. I know it's a 16% strikeout rate right now, but he's got the juice to get back into the low 20s, which is still bad. Sub 25 is pretty bad for fantasy, but if he does everything else that we think Mitchell Parker can do, I can live with low to mid 20s. I do need that though. 16%, I cannot live with that. We need to see the K's turn up, but I like him for the two step this week, and then we kind of play it start to start. After that, he's gonna get
at Cincy. You can sit that one probably.
That's a skip there because I do think that that offense is going to start coming around, and I always want to be careful with that ballpark. So it's one and done or two and done, I guess, since it's a two-step for 10-teamers and 12-teamers that'll use Parker. But in your 15-teamers, if you don't use him for the at Cincy, I would hold. Unless he just gets crushed this week, I think you hold him and then play the matchups with Parker.
Yeah, unless he gets crushed, to your point, he's essentially that term we use as a bench streamer. Like, he's better.
Yeah. I call it team streamer, you call it bench streamer,
same thing. Yeah, because you don't want to keep adding and dropping him. Same thing. So even in 12s, if you don't technically need the spot, he's probably worth a hold because he'll be serviceable more. Because I'm with you. Like, he's shown the signs of strikeouts. He's like a David Peterson with better control.
Which is what,
like, just, I like just that. Like, give me the strikeouts that Peterson gets me. Like, mix that in there and we're in. And that could be a heck of a pitcher if he figures that out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This one, he's sucking me back in, Paul. I've been an Eduardo Rodriguez fan for years. Toby used to make fun of me because he's like, yep, you hate whip, don't you? Because it's always 1-2-4 or 1-4-0 is what he always called it. I'm like, yeah, you're not wrong on that one. And Erod had a horrific year last year, basically injured most of the season.
Yep.
He's bouncing back. It's only 5-plus innings in every start. So he's only gone 6 innings or more once. We've seen 3 earned runs or less in all 3. We saw 9 Ks yesterday. We had 12 Ks prior to that. 409, and this is where it gets fun now if you like want to look at early stats. A 409 ERA, like a 236 xFIP, a 238 FIP, and then if you want to go a little deeper in the metrics here, and now we're freezing up on me. Oh, you bum. But we know this is very good.
I think something's wrong with the site. Yeah, same exact thing over here.
But he's pitching great. Strikeout rate's great. What stood out to me, because I wrote him up the other day for HQ, his K to walk is through the roof. Like, he's not walking dudes. And that's always the issue with E-Rod. So that's when I started looking at it going, okay, this is not good. So should we be buying back in, Paul?
I say yes. And I wrote them up. I do a daily SP chart where I rank all the starters and recommend if I'm starting them in shallow, medium, or deep leagues. And I said he looks really appealing because it was at Miami. So that was the easy way to jump in on him. He had a 29% K rate going into that start. And I even mentioned, like, there's not a ton of juice behind it, meaning his swinging strike rate, nor his stuff plus, like those sorts of metrics, they're not jumping off the page. But if there's any place where you can kind of keep getting strikeouts, even if you're not necessarily earning them, quote unquote, it's Miami. And what did he do? He went and put another boatload up. So now he's up to a 30% strikeout rate. it's going to come back down, folks. But I'm also a longtime E-Rod sucker. I've taken the whip hits over the years. I'm right there with you, Bubba. But I think he's a great team streamer. And even somebody in 15s that I'm generally looking to start. He gets Tampa Bay next week at home. I'm open to that. Tampa Bay is a good team, but they're not as good on the road. They're feasting on that new ballpark they have. And then he gets a two-step, and it's a toughie at the Mets, at Philly. But I think that's playable in 15s and on the board in 12s for E-Rod. When he's healthy, he's a damn fine pitcher. And yes, you do need to cover the whip. He only had one good whip year, and it was with my Tigers in 2023 at 115. Other than that, he's a career 130. So yes, protect the whip. But ERA, strikeouts for now, and then high win probability, even though he's only 1-2, I still think it's high win probability being a Diamondback. I'm in on Eduardo Rodriguez. I'm right there with you.
Yep. Let's hope that two-step goes well, because it might make us feel back like we're the old days if he screws that one
right
up. All right, you mentioned this pitcher earlier, and I'm glad you did, because Jose Soriano has been quite the buzz. I've heard you guys talk about him. I've heard other places talk about him. He had that 9K game against Cleveland in his second start that really stood out, but we're seeing him 3 earned runs or less most of the time, 5 innings. He's getting you the strikeouts. Indicators look good early on here. I know there was hype from him in the past, big strikeout stuff, but no walk. Like, he just walks everybody, and that was his issue. And we're kind of seeing that get a little better this year. Not elite, still 10 Ks or 10 walks to 20 strikeouts and 25 2/3. But are we getting back on board with Jose Soriano here?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. My boy Nick Pollock, our good friend, put me on him last year. In 2023, and I was immediately sold. First start I watched him, I was like, "Ooh, this guy's really fun." And so I've been tracking him since. But that comp that Justin made to Dustin May and Jordan Hicks, I do think has some viability to it. And what that means is that it's nasty, nasty stuff, but are the strikeouts going to be there? They were there in full force in that first 2023 sample, but it was only 42 innings with a 30% K rate, and it was out of the bullpen. Then last year as a full-time starter, it was down to 21. Now, again, as I said with somebody like Mitchell Parker, I can live with the low 20s if you're doing everything else. It was a 3.42 ERA and a 1.20 whip. For a 15-teamer, that definitely works. He's at 20% K rate again this year, 3.16 ERA, 1.25 whip. But it's on the tightrope a little bit, where if the Ks go down anymore or the whip goes up anymore, we're in some trouble. I love the talent, though. This is another guy that I'm going to keep using that phrase of, like, even for the first bad start or two, I'm not going to jump off. I think it's a great two-step opportunity this week with Pittsburgh coming to visit him and then him going to Minnesota. And then the following week, he gets my Tigers, who are a solid team. I'm not trying to be a homer. I think they're a good enough offense to, you know, respect but not run from. So I'm starting Soriano for all three of these next starts, and then I'm going to kind of reassess after that. I don't want to give up this talent, though. So even in a 12, if I'm not starting him every time, he's definitely a team streamer. You do not want to put Jose Soriano back on the waiver wire when you're not using him. 61% ground ball rate. That's another thing too that I should mention with like May and Hicks. When you've got a ground ball rate that high, it makes up for the lack of Ks. If you've got the defense behind you to turn it into outs, that can definitely work. That is a little bit of the problem, is that the Angels do not have the best defense, but Neto's coming back. Hopefully that can help. I know he's not the best defender, but he's better than Tim Anderson. So yeah, bottom line, I like Sori. I'm running the two-step next week in pretty much every format. But we do need to see a little bit more here to be like fully confident about starting him every time out.
Yeah, when you have all those walks, the ground ball rate does bail you out once in a while too. So that is a plus indeed. And another point you made there, it's like if you're not going to start him, he's still a tough drop. We said about a few guys so far. And it kind of goes to something I've talked about on other shows, is like when you're doing fab, there's a lot of shiny toys. But it's so early to give up on guys. Like, who are you dropping? Don't just drop a guy because he had a bad – like. You got to be willing to take those hits, because you know everyone talks churn and burn all the time, but you could still only start so many guys a week, and your bench is still 7 players. Exactly. So just because you added them doesn't mean you're using them, so on and so forth. So adjust accordingly.
No, I totally agree. I'm not going to make a huge point on that, but I totally agree. Like, have a spot or two that you can churn and burn, but I think it could get to be too much where you're chasing your tail and you're chasing the past week's good performance with a bunch of guys who aren't going to keep it up.
Completely agree. We'll go to your backyard, your boys, the Detroit Tigers. Casey Mize, Mike. This one, I remember early in the draft season, Ryan's like pointing out things. I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man. He's still kind of, you know, the injuries last year, I'm concerned. I kind of want to see it and whatnot. And then as I started seeing it in spring, I started adjusting my tune a little bit with Casey Mize, and he's looked good for three starts so far. 15 Ks over 17 and a third innings with six walks, a 2.6 ERA. The underlying indicators for ERA do suggest he's been a bit lucky, one might say, but again, small sample. So where are we at in Casey Mize? Because I guess there's concerns of workload. There's concerns of how, like, is this real? So many things with him. I'm pretty positive you've watched all three starts. So, So how are you feeling on Casey Mize?
I'm feeling pretty good because I do think that the watching experience gives you a bit more than the stats do right now. Like, you can really see how this is working, how the stuff is popping out of Casey Mize's hand and is a lot more electric than really any time that we've seen him. You know, 22% K rate, I've been talking about it a bunch here, a low 20s K rate is not going to knock your socks off. But for a guy who's been a career 18%, that's a substantial gain right now. And with a 12% swinging strike rate, the shorthand is usually that your swinging strike rate, 2 to 2.5x should be your expected strikeout rate. So there could be a little bit more in the tank here. Like, we're seeing some real swing and miss from Casey Mize that we've never seen, to the point where he could get into that 24 to 26% K rate zone. Right now, he's running an 86% left on base rate and a 222 BABIP. Neither of those will hold. Those are reliever type numbers. Those are small sample numbers. And that's why he has a 2.60 ERA. Plan for something in the mid to upper threes with the ERA. I don't think this is going to be like a crazy breakout Cy Young contending type season. I think it's going to be a very competent season, though. I think the whip is going to be good. That's going to be the calling card. I've talked about this player profile in the past, but I think the guy with the elevated ERA, let's call it like a upper threes to low fours, but a great whip, I think that player profile gets underrated in our game. We are drawn to ERAs. Even though we all know that ERA is not a great skill indicator, we're just drawn to that number. And anything over four feels ugly, even in the 15-team universe. And it's like, it's not. And if you're bringing a great whip with a representative number of Ks and decent win opportunity, which is new to say now that the Tigers are decent. But I'm really in on Casey Mize. I promise it's not homerism. I, like you, Bubba, I had some skepticism coming in. I've always stuck with Torque, but Mize was somebody that I was starting to move off of. But the way he made some changes this year, the splitter's nasty again. The arsenal as a whole is really impressive. I think we could see a lot. And you mentioned workload. He's reached a buck 50 before. That was back in 2021. And I think looking at a guy's previous career high is a good indicator of where they can get to in a year that they're coming off of few innings. He had 100 last year, only 10 in 2022, and missed all of 2023. So there are some concerns that he might not have a huge workload. I think he can easily get to the 150, and they might even be ready to push a 28-year-old Casey Mize up to 170. So as long as he's healthy, I think he's pitching every fifth day and that they're not really going to baby him as far as the innings.
That's good to hear because, yeah, I think the skills are great. I wanted to make a point to your watching something live. Like, everyone lives in this stat metric world now, and I get it. They're very valuable. I like to utilize them, but right. The joke of me being a caveman is I like to watch and see how things go. So the other night, Ryan and I did our first playback live, and we were doing the Bobby Miller start. And Ryan missed like the first inning and a half, and I think Bobby Miller's garbage. And Ryan walks, gets in, and he goes, oh, he's got 7 Ks. I'm all, Ryan, watch. Just watch him pitch, please.
Just watch. Pitch. Yep.
Well, first it's the Rockies. They're swinging at garbage. And I said, Henry Mullins should be fired. He was fired the next day, actually.
He was, yeah.
that whole approach to the plate was garbage. Well, and then Ryan starts watching him, and he's like, his misses aren't even good misses. I'm like, yeah, he's horrible. And then so just watching it showcased my point to you can't get everything just by looking at the stats on
that. And I think a player like Bobby Miller and what he can do, like where he's getting Ks even when he's getting beaten, that is exactly the kind of guy that you need to watch, because I'm 100% with you. I love the stats. I'm all for them, but you got to mix in watching as well. And I know we can't watch every game, but sometimes you got to sit down and make a concerted effort, because you're going to hear people say, sure, it was only three innings, but he had a 33% strikeout minus walk. I don't care. He looked terrible. And I say this as a big time Bobby Miller believer. I was huge on him coming into 2024, and I took that face caving right on the chin. I had him in like every league. I'm not going to make the same mistake with him that I've made with so many starters like him in the past, where I just kind of keep staying bought in. At this juncture, I'm willing to lose on Bobby Miller. So if he returns and starts to string together some good starts, hat tip. I'll cheer for him, but I'm not making the moves. In fact, now he got sent back out, so no one's going to be bidding on him this week anyway. But even when he comes back up, because he'll inevitably come back up again this year, I got to see it at this point. I got to see 3, 4, 5 starts, and by then he'll be picked up. So that's fine. I'm happy to be out of the Bobby Miller business. Like I said, I am rooting for him, but he looks completely lost, and I just I don't see a way back right now.
It was rough. Let's go to Quinn Priester, the Brewers picked up from the Red Sox because they needed a pitcher with a pulse in the starting rotation. And Priester had a little prospect pedigree at one point in time with Pittsburgh. He's made 2 starts, 5 innings, 1 earned run, 8 Ks over those, or 10 innings, I guess, over those 2 starts. This is another one. Like, we're seeing Priester with a 0.9 ERA. The indicator suggests like a 4 or 5 CR, which is probably more in line with what Priester usually does. But we're also seeing a guy that has a 20% K rate and that old-fashioned 12.5% walk rate, Paul. So my point being is people are going to see, you know, the 0.9 ERA and be like, huh, maybe he's figuring it out. How excited should we be?
Temper your expectations here. And again, I'm a big-time deep league guy. I'm exclusively 15-teamers these days, so I see everything through that prism. I do think Quinn Priester has some juice in your deeper leagues to at least be on your reserve roster. Now, Milwaukee's one of those organizations that I give a lot of credit to just generally. So if they're in on a pitcher, I'm going to give them a second look at the very least. So Quinn Priester, I think, is somebody to monitor. I watched him pitch against my Tigers, and there was some impressive stuff there. Like just the raw stuff and what he was doing was pretty good, even though it was only 5 innings with 4 Ks and 3 walks. That doesn't jump off the page. But one hit, he was pretty nasty at times. It was kind of like 3 great batters here, a bad batter here or two, and the Tigers weren't really punishing him when he was missing. Like you said, there was some prospect acclaim here with him back with Pittsburgh and then again with Boston when they picked him up. I would stay bought in here. I want to see where Quinn Priester's going. He's got a 2-step coming up this week. It's at San Francisco and at St. Louis. 2 good venues, but 2 tough lineups. This is a big litmus test for him. It is a little bit of, I mean, not a little bit. It's a gamble, even in 15-teamers, but it's a gamble I'm open to taking. At the very least, even if you don't want to use him for the 2-step and you want to see how it goes, I'd pick Quinn Priester up this week because he gets at the White Sox the following week. And if he does anything this week and is still available in your league, the price will be sky high for the White Sox start. So at the very least, pick him up now and stash because I want to see where this goes. And these next 3 starts are going to be that sort of test period that I'm going to give Quinn Priester. So all in all, I'm in on him for deeper leagues.
Yeah, and I'm pretty much in tune with you because I do like the skill set there. I don't even know if I'd start him for this 2-step though. Like, literally prove That's it to fair. Me. Like, prove it to me. But then if he proves it, I'll miss out at the same time. So pick your poison on that battle.
But that's why I would maybe get him this week. If you have a bench spot that you can afford for Quinn Priester, get him this week. Even if you don't want to start, put him off to the side. And then if he pops off, boom, you can start him at the White Sox the following week, which Bubba, you know, and I don't say this to insult you, but I would start you at the White Sox.
Yeah, fair enough. I start my right-handed against the White Sox, and I'm left-handed.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I would start your opposite hand at the White Sox right now. So I definitely want Quinn Priester at the White Sox the following week, even if you're passing on the 2-step.
Yeah, it's like with Osvaldo Beto and JP Sears this last week. I'm like, just pick them up. They're playing the White Sox. Even next week, they face them in Sacramento. Play them.
I'm in. Yep.
I don't care. Just do it. That's like the running bit on our Fab preview with Ryan. It's like when we look at the White Sox schedule, it says, okay, who are they facing pitching-wise now? Okay, pick this guy up, and this guy up.
There's just auto-pick them up for the week. Until they start bringing up all the prospects and reforming that lineup, it is a very easy lineup to pick on exclusive. Like, it almost doesn't matter who it is. Like you said, those athletics guys, boom, I'm in. Next week, let's see who is a weird name that they get. Well, actually, it's the Athletics and the Twins. So those are all pretty competent guys. Here's one. Just a little quick pivot here, because this guy looks like complete trash right now. And I do have a lot of nerves about Walker Buehler.
Yeah, heck, I should have put him on the list. I should have.
He gets them for the Patriots Day game. So that's that 11 o'clock in the morning game.
Oh, even worse.
And then at Cleveland, are you starting Walker Buehler next week? And if so, what formats?
Yeah, you're starting him in 12 and deepers because you want that Sox start. But I'm terrified because even the good starts – like on that Patriots Day game usually don't end well.
No. Don't. Oh, and I want to say this about it too. Going back to our point about watching games, his start, Walker Buehler's start against Toronto, looked amazing on paper. But if you watched the game, it was not a 6 1/3 one hit or a 1-run, 7-strikeout game. I mean, it was, those were the results, but the stuff was not impressive. And I'm just not there with Buehler. And again, similar to Bobby Miller, this is a guy I loved. So you'd think I'd be looking for any reason to get back in, but I got to be honest, I'm still remarkably nervous about Buehler.
Yep, I'm out on Buehler as well. So with you on that. And if he doesn't do it next week, you should all be running away, I think.
Yeah, he's an auto cut everywhere if he doesn't have a good week next week.
Yep. Zach Gallen, this is a guy that was, you know, for a former ace, I think we can all agree coming into the year he wasn't an ace, but still a high-end pitcher, and he was going rather late for his qualifications, I'll say. Well, he's not really backing it up so far, Paul. He's given up 11 earned runs over 21 and a third innings in his first four starts, 24 Ks, 11 walks, though, to go with that has not been great. You know, two starts, it's been 2 earned runs or less, two starts, 4 to 5 runs. Pick your poison. He dominated the Yankees, which really makes this whole thing confusing. How do you look at Zach Gallen? Because it's a guy that in the past we never even would have given a second thought to not start. And right now he's probably more in the conversation of should we?
No, I think that's totally fair. And I came in giving him pretty much a full pass for last year. It felt like a classic World Series hangover to me where he piled up a bunch of innings and just was a bit off last year. You know how sometimes we'll make a throwaway comment of like, I'll take 80% of this guy over 100% of this guy. Well, he was like 80% of himself last year. And we saw that was like, okay, it wasn't that good, but it was competent. And so I wanted to buy back in on Gallen this year. Turns out a lot of people also did too. So I wasn't able to get him as much as I wanted. The 2-up, 2-down is interesting because the schedule's been a bear. Cubs, Yankees, Baltimore, Milwaukee. No let up in any of those starts. So he cooked the Yankees in Milwaukee and the Cubs in Baltimore smoked him. Here's the thing. With somebody like Gallen, he's getting a 10 to 12 start run for me before I even blink with him. And I'm talking about cutting for sure. You might bench here and there in some of your shallower leagues if you want. Atlanta's getting back on track, and that's who he has this week. Now, I will say I'm fully in to start Gallen, but if you are getting nervous, at the very least, don't cut him. I think you could regret that. The 12% walk rate is the highest it's ever been. That's a little bit peculiar. 1.3 homer 9 is a 4-year high right now. I want to see where those things go, though. It is still 4 starts, Bubba. And I know I don't have to tell you this, but we are still in that zone where one start to the positive or negative can completely flip your numbers. So if he goes out and dominates Atlanta this year, all of a sudden the whole surface numbers look amazing. So Gallen gets a long leash for me. I'm not really going to check in with him seriously about cutting for at least another month, I think.
Yeah, 100% with you. He's not a cut, even close to a cut for me right now. Now, this is where I get to stick my foot in my mouth when I said I shouldn't trust Liberatore. He's 25 years old. He's developing, so on and so forth. Because JT Jen, I like a lot, Paul. And it could be because I do a lot of AL West work for HQ. I don't know. So I kind of like dig in on these things. But yes, Jen had an interesting, like, he wasn't horrific, but it was like a 4.5 to 5.5 ERA. We saw some okay strikeout numbers, walks were there too. But then we saw something change, and it started in the spring training. The strikeout started climbing. Then we saw in two AAA starts, strikeouts through the roof in those two starts. Then he comes up here in his first start in Sacramento against the Mets, strikes out 6 and walks 2 in 5 1/3 innings. Yep. Like, really impressive stuff, all things considered. He was very popular in main events this week. I think he was the number one ad, actually, in main events this past week. He'll be widely added, most likely, here in OCs this week. Should we be that excited about JT Jim?
I think so. You know, when you see a change like this, and it's also been paired with a big velo spike. Now, it's one start, literally one start, but it's over 2 miles faster than he was last year in the major leagues, 92.2 to 94.5. If he holds some of those gains, and that could just be first start juiced back up to be in the majors, because it was only at 92.7 in the minors. So it probably is just a one start blip, but it's nice to see, along with all the strikeouts that you're talking about for JT Ginn. I'm in here. I want to see where this goes. Again, I want to keep reiterating, I play mostly deep leagues. So for you 10 and 12ers, it's a little bit more tenuous where it's like a team streamer or even a standard streamer situation. But even if you don't want to start him against Texas at home this week, he's got a two-step the following week where Ginn's going to go to Texas and to Miami. Yeah, I want that. So even if you don't use them this week, I think you should still bid and hold for the following week, because it's the classic thing that I said about, I forget which player earlier, where if he pops off this week, then that two-step price becomes super expensive. So get in now on Ginn, see where this start goes, even if you don't want to start him, and then you got him set up for a two-step that includes at Miami.
Yep, I love getting the two-step a week early guy for like a dollar or two.
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing. Three more guys real quick here. Grant Holmes was a name you mentioned earlier in the show. ADP was climbing, and it's because we saw the finish and the hype train. Finished last season, hype train this offseason. He at least showed me something in this last start against Toronto where he went 7 2/3 inning.
Yes.
Giving up three runs. I was concerned with the four inning stuff. I'm like, what are we doing right now? Where are you at on Grant Holmes? Because in reality, he's probably pitching closer to what we should have expected from Grant Holmes, because the 10 walks to 15 Ks is a big red flag to me. But what do you think?
No, I think it's totally fair to point that out. But I was in on the Grant Holmes train. I was part of driving up that price. I was paying it. So for me, that means, again, a 7 to 9 start run before I'm going to make a major assessment. We're at 3 starts so far, and I'm totally with you where I took a lot from the 7 2/3 just by virtue of the fact that he went that deep. That was nice to see after back-to-back 4-inning outings, and because the walks came down. He walked 4 in those first 2 games, only 2 this game. I'm going to give him another lengthy run here of at least 3 to 5 more starts, because I want to see this out. Because if Grant Holmes can be good, he's on one of the best teams in baseball. And I know they played like crap. I still am not out on Atlanta yet. Remember Houston last year, how badly they started? And it got even into mid to late May where it was like, God, maybe this team does suck this year. And they completely flipped it. That's Atlanta this year for me. They just got Strider back. They'll get Acuna back. They still have too much talent to be this crappy. I like Grant Holmes at Atlanta, at Arizona this week. I will say I'm a little bit nervous for the Dodgers. He gets the Dodgers twice. By the way, we got whipsawed with him. Remember, he had the 2-start setup, Dodgers and Miami, and the Miami one got rained out.
Yeah,
so we had to take
that's rough.
We had to eat the Dodger dud, and we didn't even get the cookie at the end. So that really stunk. But I'm in on this. I want to see where this is at. So I'm going to get the 7 to 10 starts. I think I've been changing the number every time I said it. I'm going to get 7 to 10 start sample here. It'll be the lower end if the walks just don't go away for Grant Holmes. But if he shows that the two walk games were a bit of a blip, then I'm going to be closer to the 10 starts before I'm going to make a major assessment on him. I think there's still a lot of talent here, and I want to see this through. Nothing has changed over these 17 innings between then and draft season to make me completely pivot right now.
Good point. And on the bright side is Braves need starting pitchers, so he's not the one getting axed on that one.
Exactly.
Corbin Burnes, it's been a horrific start to the season. If you throw Friday's game in there, you get 2 runs over 6 innings. Still just 3 strikeouts, though. Over the 4 starts, 17 Ks and 9 walks with 11 earned runs over 21 1/3 innings pitched. It's been brutal, like really bad. And the underlying stuff doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy, Paul. Similar to Gallon, it's like Burnes has earned the right to stick around for a while.
Right.
No doubt about it. I'm not saying cut the guy, but it's getting really difficult to throw him out there right now.
It really is. And he doesn't even have some of the indicators that you're comfortable with seeing, like Gallon, to at least keep throwing him out confidently. It just doesn't look good with Corbin Burnes right now. Now, again, 6 2 today, 6 innings, 2 earned. Great. But only 3 Ks. And sure, the Cubs are good and Wrigley's tough. I grant that. But this is Corbin freaking Burnes here. But maybe there's a reason. You know, there was some skepticism on him. The fantasy community was not all bought in together. And I hammered Baltimore for not re-signing him. Maybe they were right to not re-sign him. They still should have gotten somebody. Dylan Cease, Garrett Crochet. I still think they completely botched their pitching. But maybe Corbin Burnes wasn't the guy. Maybe they knew something about him that had them concerned. The problem is, for me, I don't think it's actionable. And this is where I get into like that whole, you know, I paid this pick for him, I'm going to see this out. And maybe that's a wrong strategy, but I've been playing this game too long that aces can turn on a dime sometimes. And for now, he is still an ace to me, Corbin Burnes. Because as off as last year was, right, because his strikeouts came down last year. In fact, they've come down every year since the 2020 shortened season, from 37 to 36 to 31 to 26 to 23 and now 20. Despite that, I can't jump off of him without 10 to 12 starts under my belt. I got to see this through. Today is at least a positive step forward, even though it only comes with 3 Ks. How many swinging strikes? 7 in 98 pitches. That's really bad.
Not good. His whiff rate has been bad in every start.
Bad, folks. But I'm
push
come to shove, I'm not going to sit him against Tampa Bay next week. I'm not going to sit him at the Mets the following week. I think it's not actionable. And it's one of those that can be really tough in the fantasy world where you're like, should I bench this guy? But that's when he's going to drop 13 Ks on your bench. And I'm not comfortable missing that. To me, it's that balance of, would I rather possibly take on another bad start from Corbin Burns or miss 13 Ks? And I know it doesn't look likely that he's going to get 13 Ks anytime soon, but it's still in the tank. I got to give him 10 to 12 starts. I'm sorry. I got to see this through till Memorial Day, and then I'll reassess. It is bad right now, though. And where I will say you can start to maybe bench him is like a 10-teamer, but I'm nowhere near cutting, not even in a shallow league.
That's fair. Last pitcher I got on the list here is Bailey Ober. It's a yearly tradition for him to get shelled out the gate. And then we've seen him be quite serviceable the last, like, he's getting closer to Bailey Ober form. I'm not concerned. Any thoughts for you?
0% concern. This is why ERA is so difficult early on. It's a difficult stat in general, but he's going to take some time to work that 8 earned runs off. And same as last year when KC smoked him to begin the season, took forever to shave that ERA down. Folks, the 6.16 is deceiving. He's allowed 5 earned in the subsequent 3 starts. He has a 2.76 ERA. Like I said, 0 concern on Bailey Ober. I would put in a trade league, I'd put out a feeler to try to get a discount. And even if I couldn't get a discount, I'd pay full market, but you start low and you kind of work up. Don't start stupid. Don't offer your 30th round pick. But if he was like, what, a 5th, 6th round pick, maybe you offer a 7th, 8th round guy. See if you can get a little discount and then work your way back up. But I would buy Bailey Ober. I'm fully in still.
Would you trade your Roki Sasaki for Bailey Ober?
I sure would. I sure would. I love Sasaki long term. The Dodgers will figure him out. I think he will be an ace. I don't think that's this year. I'm not even sure it's next year. But the dude is 14 years old, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, super young. Yeah.
23 to be exact. But yeah, he's so young that it doesn't matter. I think they will figure it out, like I said, but I would trade him for Ober for sure.
All right, I got one question from Twitter for you from Steve Puntanini. Thought, just you can give literally your Twitter-sized answers to these.
Okay.
Hayden Wesneski.
Huge, huge fan. Love Hayden Wesneski. Bought in. It's going well early. I'm fully on board.
Bowden Francis.
Tepid. Yeah. Not even tepid. I'm actually out. I didn't believe in the magic BABIP, and I don't see underlying skills to protect him. Out.
Yep. Love my Wesneski shares. Out on Francis. This one I'm really curious because I've heard you and Justin argue about it, and I have my thoughts. Brian Wu.
Okay. Justin's so wrong about Brian Wu. Like, he's over the top worried about his health, and I've argued with him all offseason about, you know, placing too much risk on health risk on guys. Yes, he has health risk. I'm not denying that. And it is higher than your standard pitcher. But to me, my big point has been the difference between someone like Wu, who has a bunch of injuries, and say like Logan Webb, who we treat as a workhorse. The difference in their injury risk is this. And I'm doing a very small gap with my hands right now for those that aren't watching the video. If you're pitching, you are an injury risk. So I like Wu. Give me the per inning talent. When talent is there, Bubba, I know you said give a Twitter answer, and I'm doing Twitter plus over here. When talent is there and the only thing you need is the health is the question, I'm always going to be in on those guys because I'll gamble on health. Sometimes I'll come up snake eyes, sure. But sometimes you spike 160 inning season, and somebody like Wu, if he drops $160, that's going to be a studly season. So I'm in, and I think Justin's wrong.
Well, yeah, then you think I'm wrong too. So I even admitted it on one of my recent breakfasts with Bubba's when Wu dealt. I said, I'm already got egg on my face, folks, through 3 starts. So just like keep it coming, Wu.
But here's the thing. You and Justin will become right if he gets hurt again, right? Because you're concerned, neither of you, at least I know for Justin's sake, and I imagine your sake, has not been talent. So like there's a world where we can both still kind of live in this parallel world where we're both stick to our guns. And we'll see where it goes at the end of the year. Because if he only pitches 87 innings this year, even if it's with a 2.10 ERA, then you and Justin say, hey, this is exactly what we worried about. So as long as you guys aren't questioning his talent, even though I will disagree with you about going for him, I can't disagree with the health piece because so far he has not shown.
Yeah, no disagreement on the talent. I'm with you there. All right, Paul. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. Before we head out of here, remind everybody, for some reason, if they're listening and don't know where to find you, where they can find you and what's going on, because, yeah, I think they all do.
They can find me over at Fangraphs. I run the Rotographs side. It's not rotographs.com. It's fantasy.fangraphs.com, but you can find me over there, the sleeper and the bust, with our boy Justin Mason and Joe Arrico on once a week with us. He also does Justin does an episode with Jason Collette on Sundays, and they usually have a guest. I do my daily SP chart. If you're looking for – that's good for DFS, daily leagues, weekly leagues, anything that involves pitchers, you can find some value in that, hopefully. And then, of course, you can find me on Twitter at Spore, on Blue Sky at Spore, and I stream on Twitch a little bit more infrequently these days, but it's twitch.tv/Spore, and I do lots of things there. I play video games. I do a box score show a couple mornings each week, similar to Breakfast with Bubba, where I like to do it in the morning there. I drink my Red Bull and go through box scores. So yeah, I'm everywhere.
Yes, you are. You definitely are one of the OGs in this game. And if you're ever bored one of these nights when we're doing a playback, feel free to come hop on. And,
absolutely.
And chat. It's the coolest format ever, as you've obviously experienced.
It's so dope.
Yeah. So, all right, everybody. As he said, follow him on all social media platforms at Spore if you, for some reason, aren't already. But this was Bench with Bubba, episode 760. Catch you all next time.